You know, to me, the practice of outside means opening yourself up to realms beyond yourself. And ideally, they have more energy. And ideally, they're, I don't know, divine, angelic, or close to it, to me. And that kind of verse would come from this part of the world says a lot about the potential connection to a healthy spirituality. Not a religion, but a healthy mm-hmm. spirituality. And the fact that we're the less churched, you know, part of North America, it would yeah. seem to me that there's something to read into these notions.
Yeah. Just in recent years, the Harper government and what it represents is the rich suburbs. And that's something that's quite new here. So with the exception of that, I think you're right.
Could you talk about After Desire? How did that series get going?
It got going because I had prostate cancer and had my prostate removed, which breaks the connection between sexual desire in the genitals and sexual imagination in the brain. And it got me to thinking about what desire had meant to me in my life and how things would change if desire were less important.
Or removed. I mean, this is an experience I hope I don't have, you know. Mm-hmm. But when this operation happens, there's a corresponding removal of fantasies and everything else, or sexual, you know, the sexual
yes.
imagination.
Yes. Little by little, it takes a while. You can see in the poems, you can see that they still are there, but gradually they go away. Yes.
You begin to realize you can't pull the trigger anymore.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. That's interesting because that explains a lot of the rest of the questions or many of the questions that I have written out. Because you talk about your body and soul being blighted in the poem, you want to imagine from that series. You want to imagine.
Uh-huh.
Body and soul being blighted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we can go to that poem that's in the Cap Review, as you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Page 36.
Oh, yes, right. Well, shall I read that one?
I would love that.
You want to imagine. You want to imagine the words you would like to read that would tell how the world suddenly came apart, more of how the parts, free of their false togetherness, asserted their separate beings, the world of power without qualification, the reality of pity for the innocent, your own body and soul blighted. Words that would grasp this process of disintegration, deremption, as a moment of rebirth. So the knowledge that no such rebirth is possible is one thing, the rebirth itself another. In the city, in lucidity for a moment, on the knife edge between truth with no qualification and meaninglessness. That this observer will go to one of the hospitals and the young and innocent who have never spoken a script written for them by power stay in their moments sharply divided from your departure and which proceed at 100 perpendiculars not to arrive at the same destination. No one to arrive at your destination but you. And power goes on, a reality around your mind, seen as it would be seen, no interior knowledge of it visible, just the way the air turns black with an exudation of knowledge, its own oil. I would like to read the poem that departs from truth at the cost of death, invisible to all but by its kindly stature, disclosing, opening out the eternal world where the others live. The passage of desire like a fact, the heroism of young parents, another fact, living with desire and with heroism of care, how can they have been placed on this precipice, always at the edge of being? How can the world be so indifferent? How can they be so indifferent and at the same time placed at an extreme point beyond even all of their knowledge and with desire. Often it is as if everything has stopped, though everything is moving, the bus is moving. The heart without desire, is it a heart? One must begin to gather knowledge like this, the objects of feeling without feeling, the feeling of others, second best heart, Frost's diminished thing. To make use of the feelings of others, to make of them a cloak, to hide from the screaming baby in the brain, a cloak of invisibility to hide insensibility. Always turn outward, world of heroism and indifference and persistence, inertia at the same time, and beauty, the beauty of innocence, even if of one's own innocence before death, stripped of even the desire for desire, angry at the leaves you track in, angry at the self you track in, home from peeping at the babies, vicariously enjoying the plight of the young in their extremity. How can you be so indifferent? Les jeunes hommes on their way home from school, extinct fantasies. They come to mind less often now, indescribable missingness. Men and women take their place. Yes, men and women. You wouldn't be kidding us now, would you, Mary? And strollers. And you ask, what are babies? And what good is a newborn baby for whom you are already dead? Electric shock of being looked at by a baby. Suddenly you come into existence, pierced, then dismissed. Pierced, perceived. And to be perceived is to exist. Two generations of kids in the pub, X and Y. The babies seem to stand up in their strollers and raise their fat arms and grip lightning bolts in their fists. Too much pondering, too much walking the streets, ruminating, and then noticing the strings of language like chopped up DNA, the illusion of thought. These babies will wonder what that was. Oh, mournful. Strike any attitude, Mark tells me. That's what sucks, attitude. So to remain quiet and let thought silently recede beneath perception like beneath a door sill. They are children. They become young men and women. And at the meeting, my fellow board members' faces grow more sharp and pointed. When in the restaurant a baby suddenly looks at me, I see myself in the baby's view, not there at all. And to recoup, I look back at the baby, who seems on fire. To be is to be perceived by a baby. Now that's pretty spontaneous. That's pretty much written without much forethought. And a lot of it is incoherent, but the thought of the poem seems to just take that incoherence and move with it.
Yeah. That to be able to move the energy on, as Olson was talking about.
Yeah, right.
That's just remarkable. You know, I have a 3-month-old baby, so, you know, that moment of being perceived by a baby, and
yes.
You know, when it's your kid, it's just...
Uh-huh.
And I have a 21-year-old, so I've got a big gap between the two.
Oh, yes, right.
So, but there's more to it than just my experience of that. To have, you know... babies are obviously much closer to the divine, and they don't have the same kinds of...
So Wordsworth said, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a remarkable...
Freud didn't think so.
Well, he could probably have another cigar and think about it, and maybe talk to his buddy Carl Jung if he didn't have such an ego. I don't know. There's a bittersweet feeling in this series of poems and a wisdom that comes with it. If not a Buddhist sense... of having transcended desire, something close. You know, you talk in one of the interviews about how the two divisions in the quote-unquote San Francisco Renaissance, before the marriage that brought them together, was Snyder and Kiger, that the Beats were more interested in Buddhism and the Spicer Group less.
Yes.
But, of course, Joanne, a member of the Spicer Group, is very much a Buddhist. And And these ideas... I mean, did they filter across into your life at all, this notion of Buddhism, or?
Oh, it's pretty hard to avoid it.
On the west coast of North America.
I think probably on the west coast, yes. But I've read a bit about Buddhism. And most recently I read Karen Armstrong's biography of the Buddha, which is wonderful, I think. She simplifies a lot, but I don't think she oversimplifies. So if I have any religious sense at all, a lot of it comes from my, what do I want to say, not superficial, but simplistic or simple understanding of some things in Buddhism.
Yeah. And going back to the Vancouver book, page 103, it's a city you're not at home in, and wonder at what angle could it be viewed for you to love it. It's page 103.
What is my relation to this city I am not at home in, and from what angle to expose it so that maybe I could fall in love with it? Expose some side of it as if the city were a man, but not my man. Who is he, Vancouver? To turn over as if in bed and expose the side of him who is Vancouver to come. Come from Alberta to the drive. The future of Vancouver is to come from Alberta. Has to come to begin the exposure. This is true, as if turning over in bed to find the back of the man who is Vancouver, face hidden, from Alberta, working in construction. Non-union? That's a real prediction, because we are now in a situation in BC where our future is coming from, apparently will come from Alberta.
Tar sands.
The tar sands through the Enbridge pipeline, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kind of scary.
Oh, yes. But there is a strong opposition to that pipeline.
I have a poem in the Cap Review that's in opposition to that. Uh-huh. So I'm with you on that one. Mm-hmm. But and we've not talked about Patterson, which you were reading on the bus, and which filters through a man, a city, kind of.
Oh, of course, that was one of that was part of what inspired me to write this poem about Vancouver. It was becoming aware again. I had read Patterson before, but simply the fact coming into my mind that yes, Williams wrote Patterson, and he wrote it in his 60s. And why don't I do that? Why don't I write something about Vancouver? Right. And I start out by referring to Patterson, reading Patterson on the bus back and forth across the city, the 210, a man and a city. I am not a man, and this is not my city. Now, what I'm playing on there is Williams's strong identification of himself with the city of Patterson, and then the identification of Passaic Valley as being the female principle. So that I was rejecting that concept, and also I was saying, unlike Williams, this is not my city. My city is San Francisco,
but still open for the angle that it could be viewed for you to love it.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, I have an older poem which goes back to Vancouver in April 1975, where I list a lot of the things I don't like about it. I think I don't know if I could ever become to love Vancouver.
Well, more than spend the night with it, though.
Well, yes, that's true. No, right.
I think there's one last poem from After Desire that I bookmarked with my lunch ticket that I didn't use today.
Yeah.
It's a poem called After Desire. It's on page 43, I think it is.
That's the last poem one, yeah. In the sequence. Yes. It's 49.
I'm going to need glasses, I think.
Yeah, After Desire, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the last poem in the sequence. How many poems? I think are there 12? I think there's 12 poems in the sequence. Yeah. After desire, the springs of longing dry up. Beauty is almost unrecognizable. Astonished that you passed it by. The background wants to come into sharper focus by default, but you know the background. And football keeps us going, too. Politics, reports from the slave trade. always readying ourselves for a funeral, being asked to real funerals, just sweetens the pot, some kind of game or other always in play. It's Friday again, time to do laundry. The world trying to come into sharper focus has nothing to offer but the impersonal. Fair enough, but keep the old identity in your closet to be trotted out for wear on holy days. Yeah, I really enjoyed writing that poem. So the last poem, and in a way, this I can feel a little bit of Robert Lowell in this poem too. But it's simply wraps it up.
Yeah, and wraps up the interview. You know, to have this access to someone who's dedicated their life to honing their gesture so deeply, it's a real honor and privilege. I'm very grateful.
Thanks, Paul.